You're listening to episode 5 of the It's Not Real Magic podcast. This episode was recorded on August 14th, 2019, and published on August 28th, 2019. Welcome to the It's Not Real Magic podcast. The question of the day is, what is your favorite Little Debbie snack? I'm Kevin, and I'm committing to the humble honey bun.
I am Jacob. My favorite Little Debbie snack is Pumpkin Delights.
I am Lucas. I think I'm also going to have to commit to the humble honey bun. It is simple, but beautiful, but also very sticky.
My name is Alexander, and my gosh, Pumpkin Delights is the absolute place I was going, which is interesting that we are now split 2-2 as far as which one is best.
I mean, okay,
so... No, Alex, is Honey Bun anywhere on your list? Or, like, is
no.
Pumpkin Delight far and away the best?
No, Pumpkin Delight is, like, number one by, like, several spots. So then maybe, like, coming in at, like, number four would be, like, the Nutty Buddy, or the Nutty Bars, whatever they call them.
Well, hold on, then we're, well, how about 2 and 3?
2 and 3 don't even exist. That's how far of a jump it is to the Pumpkin Delights.
Oh, so Pumpkin Delight is 1, 2, and 3.
Yeah, I was reading.
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
And then... just because I love them so much, like the fig bars that they used to have. I don't know if they still do, but I love the fig bars.
I don't remember the fig bar. Was it like a Fig Newton?
Yeah, I don't remember.
Yeah, it was like a Fig Newton, but much softer and amazing.
So here's the option. You've got all the Little Debbie snacks out there in front of you, and you can eat 5 of them. So Alex would eat 3 Pumpkin Delights before he got onto anything else.
True.
What would what would you guys eat?
Oh, man, I was... so I had it narrowed down to Honey Bun, Nutty Buddies, and Swiss Rolls, which is what they're calling them now, not Swiss Cake Rolls. Turns out that's a thing. And then when I looked into it, I ended up on a Reddit website about the Mandela Effect and was like, okay, this is a... been down this rabbit hole too many times. I'm good now.
So have they ever been Swiss Cake Rolls?
I mean, I found images of them. That's what I remember them being. I would assume they were at one point, and then they changed
the
name.
So they used to have cake in the name, but then they took it out.
Correct.
Interesting.
I feel like if you wanted to get the most bang for your buck as far as, like, weight, you have to go with the Cosmic Brownie, because they're the densest thing known to man.
I wanted to actually bring that up, because for years, you were always on that Cosmic Brownie train. What changed?
I was. I think Cosmic Brownie is still second, but I can make brownies at home. I'm not going to make a honey bun.
True.
I don't know, something about the strange sweet plasticky frosting on the honey bun is just, it's gross, but it's so appealing.
Yeah, honey buns are good, but they're not the best.
Here's the thing. So I had to keep a couple things in mind. One, I completely forgot about the pumpkin cakes. What are they called?
Pumpkin delights.
Pumpkin delights. Completely forgot about those. If I had, I would have had to put those in the running. But between the ones that I hadn't put in the running, the ones I did put in the running, I went with Honey Bun, because that was the one with the fewest downsides. Because the Honey Bun, it's cheap, and it doesn't, like... melt if you leave it in a hot car for too long. Like the frosting, icing gets a little runny.
All right. Do you eat your honey bun and you peel the wrapper back so your fingers don't get sticky and eat it as you go in the wrapper? Or
yes.
Do you open the whole thing and let your fingers get sticky?
No, I'm not a savage.
Interesting.
Yes, but you're also the one that a few podcasts ago said that you did not use utensils, so you didn't need a fork, a knife, or a spoon.
And?
So you are a savage.
No, he doesn't need a fork, knife, and a spoon, because he uses the provided plastic barrier that Miss Debbie has provided already. Now, I will say, I attempt to eat the honey bun using the plastic as a glove, and partway through, I mess it up, and then I get sticky on my hands, and I go, well, oh well, guess I might as well take it out of the wrapper now.
Do you ever warm your sticky bun, or do you just always eat at room temperature?
I am typically eating it while driving, so I don't really have a way to warm it.
Have you ever had a frozen honey bun?
Put it in your armpit.
Jeez. Now who's a savage?
No, in the wrapper, obviously. Not. Don't take it out of the wrapper, then put it in your armpit.
You're not really making the case much better, even with that clarification, boy.
don't ever offer me a honey bun. That's all I'm asking now, because I don't trust you.
It's a warm honey bun. You want.
But so, no, have you ever had a frozen honey bun? Because I used to freeze them all the time.
I have not. That are they sounds still, terrible.
Are they still soft?
Yeah, they still have a little bit of softness to them. They're a little bit chewier that way. But they tend to last a little bit longer. Like for me, okay, so Pumpkin Delights, serving size is a box, right? I mean, there is no, yes. If you open a box, you eat all 8, 10, 12, or whatever in them now because the boxes seem to keep getting smaller.
It's like a Star Crunch in that respect.
Mm-hmm. Star Crunches are good, but boy.
Star Crunches are number two for me.
It, meaning number two on your list?
Yes.
Okay. So Star Crunches take a long time to eat. Like, there is a lot of chewing that goes into a Star Crunch.
But they're so good.
You burn all the calories off just chewing.
It's a perfect food. What about, like, the oatmeal cream pies?
No, too sweet. Don't like them.
Yeah. I feel like a lot of people probably would go for that just because it's the iconic one, I guess. But too sweet.
People that grew up with Honey, I Shrunk the Kids.
Mm-hmm.
Well, for me, the other problem was, is like, oatmeal cream pies were always, like, it would be the last Little Debbie to be eaten, which means we always had them. So they were just so run-of-the-mill, like, this is your stock Little Debbie. Whenever the good stuff came in, you had to get on that.
So then the other thing is, I thought that like the only Little Debbie that they carried at Sam's Club when we were growing up was the oatmeal cream pie. So if we ever got bulk Little Debbies, it was always the oatmeal cream pie.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like the monster size one. Mm-hmm. And like to eat a whole one of those, it like had to be like 2,000 calories.
Okay, don't ask me how I know this, but some gas stations stock a double-decker oatmeal cream pie. That has a middle bun, and they also do the chocolate fudge stripe, whatever ones, the same way.
Oh, the fudge rounds, the fudgy wedgies.
Don't ask me how I know this. Those things are difficult to get all the way through.
I could see where a double fudge round would be a lot.
Oh, that I could not do a double fudge round.
That'd be rough.
I could not do a double fudge round.
Ooh, I kind of want to try now, though.
Well, it costs you like a dollar.
If we ever have a podcast where all four of us are in the same room, we can get four double fudge rounds try to eat them during the episode.
Oh, we need
who can finish it.
We need to talk about that after this recording, but that comes later.
Hmm.
Oh, gosh.
All right, so
what?
Are Pumpkin Delights, well, they're probably not the only one that you can get. Only seasonally, right? Because I'm sure they probably do some like Christmas ones. Like they a cherry cordial Christmas one, don't they?
Yeah, I was going to ask what Christmas one they do.
Those ones. The cherry cordial ones. That is, I don't know, that's tied with Pumpkin Delights. Those things are so good.
Really?
You're crazy.
Yeah. That serving size of those is a box for me.
Hold on, I got to look up these cherry cordial ones. They're a cake, right?
Mm. Yeah, it's like a cookie cake type thing. And then, like, cherry cordial frosting, and then it's all covered in chocolate.
Yeah, it's like two, like, almost like white cake covered in chocolate, and then there's like a cherry filling.
Oh, yes. Oh, hot dang. Yeah, man, those are pretty good.
Because one of the reasons I love Pumpkin Delights is because you only get them seasonally, and sometimes when something only comes around in the season, you appreciate it more than what's available all the time. But by golly, I would still hold that they are the best tasting and most wonderful.
I would also like to remind the listeners at this time that we are legally required by the FTC to inform you that we are not sponsored by Little Debbie, but if they did want to sponsor us, we would totally take that sweet endorsement cash. Yes, you can also just pay us in any...
Send me, yes.
Merchandise.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Edible or non-edible.
Case and a half of our voiced favorite.
So I didn't know I was going to be doing this tonight, but apparently this is what I'm doing. I'm on the Little Debbie website looking at all their offerings.
Is there a bad one in the bunch?
I don't think so. Did you know they make basically a dreamsicle cake?
No.
It's like a bottom layer of cake, a middle layer of white frosting, a top layer of cake, and it's like orange. It's orange flavored. It's like a dreamsicle.
Can we all agree that the zebra cakes are the worst?
Pretty bad.
No. Here's what it is.
I don't like Swiss rolls, so there's...
Okay, are you ready for the hot take? The Little Debbie mini donuts, not as good as Hostess.
Agree.
Oh, yeah, I believe that.
They make zebra cake rolls? apparently.
Do not contain actual zebra.
Unfortunately. Also, I think they do still make the fig bars. At least they're on the website.
Oh, those fig bars are good.
Available in single serve or family pack.
Mm.
They also make donut sticks that are not as good. They have some gingerbread, I think, like around Christmas as well.
Oh, yeah, the gingerbread too, man. That's good. That's on my tied for number two.
Alex, if you private message me your zip code, I can find you.
The nearest
fig bar distributor.
I like how for Jacob, it's just you have the pumpkin delights, and then everything else is just like tied for second place.
Oh yes. There's also like these peanut butter sticks that are covered in chocolate.
The Nutty Buddies.
They're called like no, they're like PB sticks or something. It's like a cookie crunch. It's almost like a Twix, sort of.
Okay.
Like peanut butter Twix. But those are really good, too.
Well, congratulations, guys. We've managed to knock out almost a quarter of the podcast just on the question of the day. So, Perfect. Given the fact that some of us don't even have topics, this is going to work out quite nicely, I think. Before I launch into my discussion topic, I would like to inform our viewers that we are working on getting emails set up so that you can send in your suggestions. But it turns out that actually trying to put together an email server is not a trivial operation. So that is not working right now. We're going to try and get that sorted out by the next podcast. And as soon as we do, then you will be able to email your suggestions to suggestion@itsnotrealmagic.com. So my topic, I'm going back to the nostalgia well, because that is how we roll, but I'm putting a little bit of a twist on it. My question to the table before me is, what was a subject that you weren't interested in as a youth, but you are now?
And are you going to answer first, as you have probably prepared for this more than we have?
A little bit, but I wanted to give you guys the chance to step in. But since all nobody's...
Right, when you say youth, give me a definition of what you're calling youth.
I'm going to say before college or high school, if you did not go to college.
All right, so kind of like age 18-ish, basically, that everything through like grade school and high school would be youth.
I guess so. Like for me, my sort of canonical example of this would be history, right? Growing up, I was not really interested into history. Now I have a good friend who, as it turns out, is a history major. And the way he's talked about history has sort of enlightened me to appreciating it. So even though there's still a lot of history I don't know, it's a topic that when it comes up, it's like, oh, wait, I want to know more about this. Like, who was this group of people, or who was this famous person I don't know about that lived 700 years ago? And why are they famous? And why should I care?
Mm-hmm.
Because for me, like, that why should I care is sort of the crux as to whether or not I'm interested in a subject, with a couple exceptions. But for history, like, once I sort of understood that people are just people, and especially people living, you know, hundreds of years ago weren't stupid, uneducated maybe, but not stupid, a lot of the historical behaviors of people make a lot more sense when viewed through that lens of people haven't really changed much.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see a lot of parallels today between stuff that's been happening in the past. Like, it seems like politically, we're sort of regressing towards leaders of countries. And when you look at history, it's like, well, that's sort of just been the norm for things. Like, the whole idea of being our country versus your country, it's kind of a recent thing. Or our ideology versus your ideology is kind of like a minority of conflicts. And a lot of the political upheaval in the world has been about people with goals, and they're just doing things serving their own interests, and they get other people to follow them, and then they use those followers to exercise power over other people. And there's a lot of that happening today.
Wait, so you're saying people centuries or millenniums ago would try to manipulate people and lie to people to serve their own best interests, and people are still doing that today?
Yeah, basically.
Hmm.
But once, I guess for me, like, I know it sounds kind of like just a basic truism, but for me, it changes the way I viewed history, and it made it a lot more interesting to me.
Mm-hmm.
I have others, but I'll let other people chime in if they want.
I guess for me, as I've become an adult. Like, I guess now I'm interested in more adult things. Like,
go on.
Well, I'll keep it PG, but yeah. Like, how do I advance my career? How do I provide for a family? Other things like, I guess like cell phones I'm more interested in now than I was when I was a kid, just because I use them now and I didn't as a child. Another topic is like woodworking. Like, I'd like to learn more about it, or I like watching videos about it. I'd like to gather more information because it interests me. And when I was a kid, I was never interested in woodworking.
Is it a subject that you regret not being interested in when you were younger and would have had more opportunity to learn it?
No, I think the only subject that I regret not learning more as a kid was writing and the English language and being able to communicate in written word effectively and with proper syntax and punctuation. So, because I was not very good at that. And I feel like I should have taken more time to learn that. I think that would have prepared me better for the future. And so going through college and even being in the business world, it's been a little bit of catch up and trying to polish those skills. So that's, if I had just learned more about it as a kid, then I wouldn't have had to do it now.
Did you just say you're polishing your skills with ketchup? Because that's
what potentially you could polish your silverware with ketchup, and you know, it's what, acidic, right? So it,
yeah, Mythbusters tried it, didn't they?
Get some patina on there.
Okay, Interesting. So for me, I would say that one, certainly once I moved to Wyoming, I became much more interested in the culture of a given location and how it varies place to place. Because like, until you actually live somewhere else than where you have lived, you don't really see how different parts of the country or different parts of a town or whatnot are just different in the way that they interact or don't interact, or the expectations or lack thereof in many different elements. And that's something that's kind of started to fascinate me, of seeing Western culture versus Eastern culture, and big town versus small town versus very small town versus just all different types of walks of life and how different they are in certain ways.
Now, hold on. When you say Western versus Eastern, you mean U.S. Western versus U.S. Eastern?
Correct.
Okay.
Yes, I did not move to a different country to get that culture, because that would be a whole nother experience. So I have a friend that's spent a lot of time as a missionary overseas in like China, Hong Kong, all that kind of area. And he spent a lot of time over there. And so he's very affluent to that culture and how different it is from American culture. And it's fascinating just to talk about and see the differences, you know, one country to another. But then even inside of our own country, just my experiences of just the different places that I've lived and people I've got to know in those places. And yeah, that kind of stuff has just kind of started to fascinate me a bit. I also like woodworking to a degree. As a hobby when I want to do it, not as a project that I have to do. I find my interest dies off really, really quickly once it becomes more than just a, oh, this is something I want to do, I'll go do it, and more of a, this is something I need to go get done, I'll go do it.
Were you not interested in woodworking when you were younger? Is that more of a recent development?
Yeah, so, and maybe when I was younger, I felt like it was maybe a push on me a little bit, because at some point I kind of got lumped into the, oh, Alex likes woodworking things. And so from Grandma and Grandpa Robinson for Christmas, it was, here's some woodworking stuff. Here's a little starter kit with, you know, you can make some different things, and the wood burning kit that you could try some different things. And it was all, you know, very low grade, low end stuff. And I felt like, oh, I have to do something with this now, or try to enjoy it, or try to continually say that, yeah, I like woodworking, because I keep being given gifts and things that pertain to that particular activity. To where now it's like, that's not necessarily the case, although I still do get some of that sometimes from some sources.
You live in Wyoming. Isn't it sort of like expected that you're just going to be a woodworker anyways?
No. It's a woodworker or a horseman.
Oh, I see.
And I suppose a prop term is a cowboy. Yeah. So if you work outside, you're a cowboy. If you work inside, you're a craftsman. But no, that would be another thing that has changed over time as far as getting more interested in. handyman kind of stuff, DIY kind of stuff. I've developed much more of an appetite for certain.
And I feel like all these things are, just because you're an adult, now you're faced with these challenges like DIY around the house, where you didn't have to do that when you were a kid, but now that you're an adult, now you have interest in it because it's a requirement.
Mm-hmm. Well, like, I built our own bed frame. Like, that's something that I never did growing up. I was like, oh, I like to build my own bed frame to hold my bed that's, you know, a little bit taller off the ground, and I can put some more storage underneath it. Like, that didn't matter to me. And then once I was, yeah, kind of out on my own, I was like, boy, I'd like to build my own bed frame. And so that's kind of stuff has really changed.
Lucas?
I'm going to say very vague in general, just politics. I never cared and intentionally avoided it in the past because I didn't. I don't like conflict, so if I don't hold an opinion, then you can't conflict my opinion and we can't argue about it. But just in the last maybe year or so, I've been like, huh, I care about some of this stuff. Maybe I should pay some attention. And then, shoot, what was the other thing I had? I think I lost it, so I'm just going to say politics.
Nice. I find it interesting because when I first started this, I was thinking of, like, interested in the sense of sort of, like, just of my own volition. I just grew an appreciation for this topic. And a lot of the examples you guys have been giving have been, well, I've needed to learn this. So it became relevant to me. So that's why I'm interested in it. And as I'm looking through my other two examples, I realized that one of them, specifically painting, like digital painting, because I am not confident enough to go dropping money on actual paint, happened because I realized it would be a useful thing for a hobby that I'm involved in. The other thing was something I was looking up related to said hobby, and I came across weaving, and I looked up a couple videos on YouTube, and I was like almost blown away. This is really cool. I was like, I wish I could do this. And then there's a bit in me that realized there's literally no way that's ever going to happen because there's just so much other stuff in my life that's actually more important. That I'm never going to actually be a weaver.
Like basket weaving or hair weaving or dancing or what's going on?
Fabric weaving. Like on a loom.
I would say one more thing for me is counseling. That's something that I've definitely developed more of the interest in and passion for.
I'd say one more thing for me is personal finance.
But haven't you always been an accountant sort of guy?
Namely like getting out of debt. And wanting to coach other people on how to get out of debt.
Oh, okay.
Are you going to leave a Dave Ramsey class at your local church?
I have attended a local Dave Ramsey class at my local church, but I have not led one.
Okay.
Have you led one?
I have not. I did attend one back when I was single. And that's closely what me and my wife follow to. So I'm definitely a fan of it. Yeah.
It would be really interesting if Jacob were to lead a Dave Ramsey class.
Mm-hmm. He kind of has that leadership quality.
Well, thank you. That is very kind of you to say that. I do like teaching. I've thought about becoming a teacher later in life, doing accounting or something like that. I think that would be interesting. I always like training new people at work because it's only for a time and I don't have to deal with them forever. It's just, you know, train them for a week and then they leave. Speaking of work and leadership, my employer very kindly paid for a group of us at my work to go to a leadership conference last week, Thursday and Friday. It's called the Global Leadership Summit. It's if you Google it, you can find it. But it's basically a worldwide conference. It's hosted in Chicago, but then they broadcast this leadership conference all across the world, like over 130 countries in the world. And anyway, so I attended that for 2 days, and it's all talks on how to be a better leader, how to be a better leader in business, in the church, in your family. And so there's lots of really good takeaways, but it is a lot of information over 2 days. So a couple things that I kind of pulled from it that I wanted to basically ask you guys about. And how do you think, these are good leadership qualities or good principles? And then how do you view leadership in your life? And how can you become a better leader in your life in whatever facet that may be? So the first one is this is gonna be a little hard because it was a visual example that he drew, but the speaker drew basically a curve on a graph that it was the more time you invest in a project or your work or whatever it may be, the quality of that project will go up. Well, eventually, at some point, it'll start, that curve will start to flatten out and actually dip, so that if you spent 4 hours on a speech, it'll be good. If you spend 7 hours, it'll be a little bit better. If you spend 40 hours, it'll only be a little bit better than the 7 hour mark. So you can actually spend too much time on something. And so the whole getaway from that was just get it to where it's good enough to move on and don't worry about perfection, because perfection will just hamper you in this case. And he also said, if you can actually decrease the time that you spend on a project, but actually increase the quality, you're now bending that curve the opposite direction. And he said, that's where you really want to focus. How can you take a process or a project, spend equal amount of time or less time, and improve the quality of it, whether that's through technology, innovation, better processes, better training, whatever it may be. And so I've kind of had that going through my mind the past week of how do you take whatever task you have, improve the quality of it without pouring more time into it. Do you guys have any thoughts?
I do, but I can't talk about them while we're recording. Somebody else is going to have to take this
Alex
one.
Or Lucas.
Lucas, you lit up.
Well, I guess just what you were talking about is basically just diminishing returns, right?
Mm-hmm.
That there comes a point where you're getting diminishing returns on the time you're pouring into something because you've got it, you know, 99% of the way. And if it takes you 16 hours to get that last percent, it really wasn't worth it.
Mm-hmm.
As far as how to improve the quality of a thing while spending less time on it, that's very appealing to me because I like being efficient. It's very difficult to actually put into practice and do. I'm trying to think of the most time-consuming tasks that I do at work and what I have done to try and make that curve go the way I would want it to, where it doesn't take me as much time, but I get a better result. There are definitely some financial things I've done at work where I have tweaked some numbers and put some formulas in an Excel spreadsheet so that I don't have to do the work every time. Mm-hmm. You know, I have a more accurate picture by just changing a couple of numbers. I can look at a large output that helps me make decisions and stuff. So, you know, there are definitely ways at work that I have done that in the past. I'm blanking on what I could do, like, currently that would allow me to do something better in less time.
So I think there's also a cost aspect to the initial, if we can make this better or faster, more efficient or whatnot, by doing something different with technology or implementing a, you know, a policy change or whatnot, that's great. But sometimes what makes something better costs you money up front to eventually get that paid out and then be overall more efficient in the long run. And here's an example of that is I have a friend who, for his job, had video editing that he needed to do as part of his job. And the computer that he had was not a video editing computer, but it was what was affordable for his position. And he was frustrated with the fact of, if we could spend $2,000 to get me a computer that could do this, I could take what's taking 3 hours right now out of the time that I'm being paid for, and I could do it in 15 minutes. And even while I was using that computer for that, I could do other things on that computer at the same time. Whereas when it's taking 3 hours to do its video processing, I can't touch it because it's taking all of its power to do this. So there would be an initial cost from the employer to invest in what that person needed tools-wise to get them from spending this much amount of time on one thing during a week to chopping that time down to like a sixth of the amount of time they were spending on that so that they can actually spend that amount of time doing other productive things.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I've come into the opinion, I'm not a business owner or a manager, so I'm saying this from somebody who's at the bottom of the food chain. So that if you value your employee's time to any significant degree, it behooves you to ensure that they have really good tools because the productivity gain is just so significant.
Mm-hmm. And that's true in like the electrical field as well of the tools that we have to work with. Some things there are hand tools and some things you can do the same thing with a power tool. And the power tool costs 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 1400 times more, but you can do it way faster on a consistent basis every single time. And it's better to have the power tool, even though you only, you know, use it for a short period of time and it costs a lot of money. It saves you over the course of several years the amount of time it would take to do the same thing by hand.
There's another aspect to this that I've run into in the world of like marketing, because marketing is very expensive. But if you don't market, then people won't buy your product, and then you won't make any money to pay for your marketing. So it's kind of this like snake eating itself process. Also, if you want to find good people to hire, you're probably going to need to pay for a service that helps you find those people or those people find you. And it's like, well, you could not do that and just make do with whatever people you get, you know, off the street, so to speak, or word of mouth or what have you. Or you could pay the money to get a really, really good person who is going to pay huge dividends to your company over their, you know, who knows, maybe years of employment there and the business that they'll bring in and the quality they'll provide and things like that. So that upfront cost is very scary, but even when it's not a tangible item, even when it's something sort of intangible, still really important.
So my next question, let's see if I can remember this, but one of the speakers had three keystones or three pillars that you will have in your work. One is being proficient with your work. One is being brilliant with your work. And one is being healthy with your work. So if you're prolific, it means you do a lot of things. You produce a lot. You're a good worker. If you're brilliant, it means you're turning out things that are of excellent quality or great ideas or, that are excellent quality. And then three is being healthy with your work. So that's having appropriate work-life balance, not getting too stressed, not getting too tired, but kind of continuing to be able to perform at whatever level you're doing. And I think you said if you're prolific and brilliant, you are fried, meaning you're going to run out of steam because you're doing a lot of work and a lot of really good work, but you're not taking time for yourself. If you're brilliant and healthy, you're fired because you're not doing enough work. And if you're if you're prolific and healthy, you're steady. And if you're, I think, just healthy and brilliant, you're fired or something like that because you're not doing enough work or something like that. Anyway, so those three pillars, it took me back to where I'm at in my career and going, okay, how am I doing on each of these pillars? And how can I improve or where am I doing a good job? So that's my question to you guys. What do you think of those three pillars? And then if you feel like you were led to, how do you feel you're performing on them?
I can tell you.
And then also, how could you do better?
So I know I definitely have brilliant and healthy down, and I struggle with, is it proficient or prolific? Because you used both.
Either one.
Okay. I'm going to use prolific because I think that gets more to the heart of the topic.
Yes.
Because I guess I sort of want to throw this back on you saying, well, I consider myself, you know, brilliant and healthy. My coworkers are largely prolific. And I'm wondering, is it best for us to try and bring the other bits into balance? Or should we take advantage of the fact that we already have this diversity within our team and sort of leverage, you know, this person's brilliance and this person's prolificness?
Mm-hmm.
I guess, like, was that mentioned at all, or is it more of a personal improvement thing?
I think it's more of a personal improvement, whether you're a supervisor trying to train someone and help them kind of keep these pillars in balance, or if it's introspective and you look at yourself and go, okay, how am I performing on the job? It wasn't necessarily pitched as, like, a team atmosphere.
So is there a possibility of being all three things? Is that, like, the sweet spot of what they're saying you need? This is like where you want to be, or they're just saying you're probably only going to be two of the three?
I think, yes, you want a sweet spot of all three, but that's very hard to do. Mm-hmm. That's a very hard balance to find.
So in the trade industry and a lot of other industries, I would say, there's kind of like a triangle of you can do your work affordably, you can do your work quickly, or you can do your work at a high quality. And you can pick any two of those things on that triangle, but you can't get all three, right? And this sounds similar to that as far as, you know, your three pillars. It's just kind of like the 3 points of a triangle to where, like, yeah, if you do two of these well, you're probably not doing the other one. Because if I can do my work really fast and at a high level of quality, then I'm worth a lot and it's not going to be cheap. If I can do it really affordably and really fast, it's probably not going to be the best quality of what you're hoping for. And if I can do it cheap and I can do a good job, it's probably going to take me a while.
I've heard the sentiment expressed quite tersely as good, fast, cheap, pick two.
Yeah, we were taught the same thing in design school as well. That idea of you can have two of the three.
So I've always kind of lived, okay, I'm going to be two of the three. And now what you're talking about is, hey, can you be all three of these pillars? I'm like, no.
What about, but there's some products that do transcend all three. Like I think of like Gmail. I mean, I guess you don't mind giving up your privacy, but it's fast, it's free, and it's a great email client. Like, it's everything you want right there for you.
Well, great email client, I mean, you know, it's been developed over a period of 16 years.
Right. And what, I'm 30. I started working when I was 17, so I've been at this 13 years. So, you know, am I improving in these areas?
I am terrified to give myself a self-assessment based on these three pillars, because I can see areas where all three of them I'm not doing very well at. So, yeah, I'm scared to even broach that, because I'm sure there are areas where I am doing good in all three of them. I just tend not to see it. So my first instinct is like, oh man, I'm flubbing it up on all three of those.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's, this is a no judgment zone. I know, at least for this week at work for me, it's been prolific and brilliant, and has not been healthy. So it is what it is. And then hopefully next week I kind of balance it back out, get a little bit more healthy in there.
Hmm.
So Lucas, has anything else happened at work that's not in regards to those pillars or leadership that?
Something happened a couple weeks ago, 3-4 weeks ago by now at work, that at the time I was like, I'm really fired up about this thing. I should talk about it. Wait, I have a podcast. Cool. I'll talk about it there. So the emotion has since died down, but I can maybe still try to convey it. So are all three of you, I know at least two of you are familiar with what Yelp is. Are all three of you familiar with the service Yelp?
Yeah, in a very
I've
vanilla sense.
I've done a Yelp review for a restaurant so that I could get a free appetizer with my next visit.
There you go. So I think we're all familiar with how Yelp works from a consumer standpoint. I'd like to explain how Yelp works from a business standpoint. If you are the business who has a Yelp listing, whether you want one or not, a Yelp listing will exist for your business, especially if you are a service industry type business, especially if you are a restaurant. Restaurants, I think, is how Yelp got started. And they've branched out to other things, but a lot of people still primarily think of Yelp as that restaurant review app or website, depending on how you use it. So whether you want it or not, a listing is created for you. You then have people who will leave reviews and comments. You know, your hours will be listed, your address will be listed, your phone number will be listed. It's not always accurate. So once your listing is up and running for a little while, a representative from Yelp will call you and say, hey, I want to talk to you about your Yelp listing. Have you looked at it? No, I haven't looked at it. So they want you to sit in front of your computer and say, well, go to such and such Yelp website and create a login, and I'll walk you through your page. Basically, earlier this year, I want to say January or so, I got tired of them calling and asking to do this over and over again. So I spoke to the representative on the phone, and I said, okay, let's do this. Monday, I'll get off of work. At 5 o'clock, you can call me. I will sit down. We'll go through the whole thing, however long it takes. I'll update all the information. We'll get it all squared away, and then we're good. So he did that. So he called me after hours for me on my personal cell phone, and we walked through it all. I thought, great. I put the information in there. And they try to sell you on, well, if you pay us, we can make your good reviews go to the top and your bad reviews go to the bottom. And we can have you be promoted on other people's Yelp pages and run advertisements for you. And I said, nope, I'm not going to spend any money. Can't spend any money. I'm just going to update our information so it's accurate and we're good. The issue is that is not good enough for Yelp. And they will continue to call. And they will continue to call. And they will continue to call. So they also have this weird, really high, like, it's either a turnover rate or they change who is assigned to your business, because about every 6 months, it's a new person calling and they don't seem to have any clue that you've already been called a million times. So probably a month or two ago, a new guy is assigned to my place of employment and he starts calling. He calls the restaurant and I talked to him and I explained very nicely, you know what, earlier this year, I went through the whole thing with a different representative. We updated all information. We're not looking to spend any money on Yelp at this point, but thanks. Which, of course, they don't take as an answer. And they keep pressing for, well, but don't you want to bring more clients in? And can you just open it for a minute? I want to show you some things on there. Because they want to get you in front of the page. So actually, during one of these conversations, I get to a point where I just hang up. Like, I didn't say goodbye. I didn't say no thanks. Like, he just kept talking and talking, and I just hung up the phone. So then he emails me twice saying, hey, I'd really like to go over your Yelp page with you. Is there a time that I can call you? And then he calls me on my personal cell the next day and leaves a voicemail twice. I think once the next day and once like a couple days later. So this has gotten to the point where I'm like, okay, I am fed up with this. You can't keep calling me. You can't keep emailing me. You can't call me on my personal cell to try and get me to look up this business thing. So one day, I decide, you know what, I'm going to call and I'm going to sort this out so that this doesn't happen anymore. Now, as you guys know, we have a father who has been in a customer service type role for the better part of his life. This is where I want to see if you guys share my sentiment. I feel that he instilled at least some amount of the people you talk to who are in customer service roles are real people and you should treat them like real people. You know, make a point to call people by their name if you can. They're not just a person who's there to get you the thing that you needed. They're actually a human being that you should respect and interact with. Do you guys like feel the same way? Do you implement that at all? Or is that just me?
Yes, I do feel whenever I interact with someone in the service business, whether it's a waiter or a waitress or someone over the phone, trying to be nice, because I've been on the other side of that, where I'm talking to people. So I want to be kind to them. I also have had some people that call me that just keep talking and try to sell you something and just keep going. And you're like, nope, I'm not interested. But they keep going. And I've hung up on them just, you know, while they're in the middle of talking. I feel bad about it, but I'm like, you know that I don't want this. And you continue to talk. Like, I feel like they should also give some respect. If you say, nope, I am not interested. Thank you. Have a nice day. They should also be able to hang up at that point. But if they keep pushing, they're just asking for a dial tone.
And have you ever, so let me go just maybe a little bit different than this, is somebody comes to your door selling, you know, whatever they're trying to sell, regardless as to what it is, right? And they kind of have their shtick and stuff. Is hanging up the same as going inside and closing the door, going inside and slamming the door, or, you know, just walking away from, you know, a conversation with somebody that you're just like, I'm done having a conversation with you? Because we're clearly, you know, even if it's not like at your front door, but at like, you know, some event or something, and you're talking and they're just kind of going on and on and on about something, you're just kind of like, yeah, okay, you just smile, nod, and walk away. Is that the equivalent of hanging up, or do you feel that hanging up the phone just suddenly is ruder than any of those other things?
I think walking away in person feels more rude than hanging up the phone, because hanging up the phone, you're still not face to face with the person. There's still some sort of like, what am I thinking? Autonomy? Is that the right word?
Mm-hmm.
Some anonymity, sort of, even if like you know their name and they know your name, it's not the same as a face to face conversation.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't want to just yell at this guy and like get all riled up and ruin his day or something like that. So I actually did some research on Yelp, because my other question was, how can they be allowed to create a listing without you wanting it, gather potentially harmful information in the form of negative reviews on that website, and then hold your own information for ransom, basically, where, oh, if you want to make those negative reviews go away, pay us. Or if you want to make the positive reviews go to the top, pay us. Like, how are they allowed to take something that's been written about you and charge you for the right to not just show it to the world? It seems very blackmail-y to me. So I looked this up, and they've been taken to court multiple times on this, and somehow the courts have always sided with them. Even earlier this year, in 2019, I think in March, a case went to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court decided not to hear it and just kicked it back down to whatever district it was in. So, you know, I'm not the only one that people have a problem with Yelp. So it's kind of been an ongoing thing. So anyway, I don't have to recap the whole conversation with this guy, but, you know, I opened it up with, one, is this conversation being recorded? Because they usually say at the beginning, hey, this is recorded for quality purposes. He said, yes. I said, good. I want it to be. And, you know, explained, look, I don't think it's right to yell and cuss people out over the phone, so I'm not going to do that, even though I want to. I'm going to explain where I'm at. I'm not buying anything from you. And the depressing thing was just the, it's like reading from a script. You know, his answers were always kicking back to, oh, but don't you want to get more sales? And don't you want more customers? And don't you want to see what Yelp can? It'll only take 5 minutes. Like, no matter how much you explain, nope, I'm not doing this with you. Stop calling me. They always have a prepared answer for it. It was just really sad because it takes the humanity out of it, because it almost feels like you're no longer talking to a person because they're not allowed to answer like a person.
Mm-hmm.
So eventually I got to the point where what I said was, look, you confirmed for me at the beginning this call is being recorded. I don't know what is required of you by your bosses for you to be off the hook for like letting an account go and stopping to pursue them. But if the recording of this conversation helps you be able to do that, please show it to your supervisors and don't call me again. And then I hung up. He actually said, okay, thanks. Have a good day. Like, that was enough for him to break off the conversation. So I don't know if I found the secret of, like, you have to give them permission to like show their supervisor, look, this guy clearly doesn't want it. I don't know.
Did you ever say specifically, don't call me again in the past?
That's a good question. I don't know if I did or not. And actually, the way I phrased it was, if I want to purchase your services, I will call you. Do not call me. Like, that was the sort of the explanation that I was giving.
Like, my gut on it is that until you actually say that, then they can always make the claim that it's like, well, you didn't say, don't talk to me, right? It's like,
right.
Until then, it's like, okay, well, maybe you're just mad. You just need to vent, whatever. And there's 100 different ways you can spin it. But as soon as you say, don't call me, like, that's a very obvious command that they might even be, like, legally bound by some sort of telemarketing law to follow.
Oh, yes, the telemarketing code.
Like, here's the thing, right? I know there's one for email. It's the CAN Spam Act, which is basically, like, if you're going to send an email, you have to give an unsubscribe link. And if they follow that unsubscribe link, you have to obey it.
Yes.
And it's very much like, if you guys do not do this, you are breaking the law. Until then, they can basically do whatever they want.
Yeah.
Well, could you even, like, is that basically like a restraining order? Or by, if you said, do not call me again, and they call you again, could you then have legal grounds for, like, we're talking about, of they would actually be in legal trouble?
Yeah, I think that's it.
Do not call me again. And if they call you again, it's like, all right, well, now I can get a restraining order on you and
sue you or something. Yeah.
Yes, because you have been possibly specifically told, do not do this.
You should get an app on your phone where you can record your phone calls and then tell them that you're recording them as well.
And
you'll say, I do not call me again. I've got this on record. And then when they do, you know, I've got this evidence. Now, if you take it to court, who's going to actually like take the case? Like, it's small potatoes. It's not going to.
Also, I would like to remind everybody here that Michigan is a two-party state for the purposes of recording consent. So you actually cannot record them unless they consent to it.
Interesting.
So you can't be like recording this in the background and not tell them until the end. That's why they have to tell you at the start of the call. This call may be monitored.
Wait, are we recording this podcast?
We are recording this podcast.
Was I asked at the start of it?
No, but I got implied consent.
Implied consent. Oh, let's hit the gray area, this law.
So the other thing that I'm thinking about when Lucas was saying that the person on the other line was just kept giving canned responses, it made me think of the Office episode where Michael Scott is doing the telemarketing after hours, and he's always like going off script, and the supervisor's like, just stay on script, Michael. Like, it'll work. Just make your calls and stay on script.
Yeah. And I run into that, like, if I call, like, my internet service provider and I call their 1-800 number, I know I'm getting somebody in some small cubicle somewhere that is just trying to make a living, and they have a flowchart or whatever in front of them that says they called about this. First, get this information, this information, this information, this information. Okay, what can I help you with today? Because it's the same every single time. And then they acknowledge the problem. And they say, well, I'm sorry that you're experiencing that. Let me see if I can help you. They're working off a script. It's part of their job description is basically to do it this way. And right. if they don't want to get fired, then they have to do the job that way, regardless as to what the person on the other end is saying. Until you hit that point where it sounds like you hit of saying, well, if the customer ever says this, you may end the call and terminate the account or whatever.
Right.
You just got to find out what that is. Yeah.
Yep.
Because like if I want cheaper internet, it's like, okay, I know. You please send me to your supervisor. Okay, I'll send you to my supervisor. All right. Can you get me a better deal? No, I can't get you a better deal. Please send me to cancellations. You want to go to cancellations? Yes, send me to cancellations. Go to cancellations. Yes, I would like to cancel my service. Oh, I'm sorry. If we were to lower the price by $10 a month, would you consider staying with us? Oh, yeah, because the manager wouldn't give me that option. The first person I called wouldn't give me that option. I have to go all the way through your hoops to get to the point in the flowchart where it says if they're willing to quit and they want to quit, offer them another deal to see if they stay.
Yes.
Which is a fun little game to play.
It's all about knowing how to work the system.
Yes.
So anyway, I guess just for Yelp in particular, it's either the recording of the conversation that worked or quite possibly the do not call me, you know, stating it very absolutely.
That is probably the most aggressive business strategy I think I've ever heard.
It is. I had never experienced like telemarketers before. You know, when you always hear comedy about them and stories and whatnot, I didn't realize how bad it could be. I mean, it was, again, the thing that bothered me most was the humanity is just stripped away and you were just told, nope, push, 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 sell, sell, sell. That's your job. Like, I wouldn't be able to do it. Like, I wouldn't be able to do it for one day. Mm-hmm. So, and I imagine that these people, because this is the tactic that their employer forces them to use, I'm sure they get screamed at on a daily basis, because it's really annoying.
Well, you know why? Because the managers over the people in that call center have to answer for the final sales.
Yeah.
And they're going to get yelled at by the regional manager if they're not hitting their numbers of how come we haven't got this many new businesses this month to sign up for our pay service.
So what you're saying is they need better leadership at Yelp.
I would just also like to throw out that I agree with your opening statement that customer service people are humans and deserve all the appropriate rights and respect thereof. But you were dealing with marketers.
A different form of person.
I apologize to the marketer who was offended by that statement. Alex, would you like to take us home?
Oh, I'd love to go home. And one of the favorite things to do at home for me is to play some board games. I like them. Yay. Board games. You guys probably like good them transition. Board games. And so my question to you guys then, first is, what is your favorite, or maybe some of your favorite board games, table games, depending on how you want to classify it. So I would say anything from Uno to Risk to, I don't know, whatever else you guys play. What are some of your all-time favorites?
Can a card game qualify? So I was thinking Dutch Blitz.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It's a table game. It flies.
Boy, does it ever.
I enjoy that game.
It took me way too long to realize that Speed and Dutch Blitz were actually like the exact same game.
Yeah, just with a deck of cards.
It's a different looking deck of cards.
Mm-hmm.
But that is a fine game. Have any of you guys here played Arkham Horror?
No. Nope.
Played it.
Nope.
That's an interesting game. It's sort of like Pandemic in that it's players versus the board.
Okay.
but it's a very elaborate and very difficult game. And that sort of started getting me into the world of, wow, board games can get like really like complex. Like it's not all Monopoly and Candyland.
Mm-hmm.
And so that game always holds a special place in my heart for just being like, I've never played anything like this before. This is kind of cool.
Mm.
It's also really dark. Would not recommend for, you know, children under 14.
The player versus the board type games are ones that I would like to play more of. I just haven't had opportunity to do so. I also really like... Here's the thing. I'm not mentioning the classics because I know we're going. So I'm trying to think like a little bit outside. There is a game called Small Worlds where you have a civilization and you try to make them as big as you can, and then you eventually send them into decline and adopt a different civilization and try to get more points with that one.
Yeah, you basically ditch your country.
Yes, you ditch your country and say, all right, I'm going to pick up this one now because I can get more points with them. I really like that game. I like the strategy. I like the visuals. Like, I really enjoy Small Worlds. I don't own it, but it's one that I would like to get.
See, I always hated getting attached to my little dudes and then realizing, oh, I have to let these guys go because it's just not wise to keep playing these guys.
You only know you love them if you let them go.
Mm-hmm. As far as like players versus the board game that I've played two. I would say one's a card game called Hanabi, where you hold your cards in your hand face out, so the other players know what's in your hand. And they're limited into the kind of clues that they can give you so that you know which cards to play or which cards not to play. And the whole table is trying to play all their cards in a certain order onto the table to try and achieve the highest score possible. That one's kind of interesting. Some people play and they cheat a little bit, but they won't be mentioned here. Then I've played Forbidden Desert, and that's one that my wife and I have. And basically we'll each play two characters. So as opposed to playing a two-player game against the whole board, we'll play a four-player game against the whole board. But really, it turns into us just talking about what should we do next as a group, as opposed to I'm going to be like, I'm not going to say anything, and I'm just going to play my turn. So we're verbally working together to try and beat the game. So I really haven't played one where you'd have like three or four different people deciding what they want to do independently without talking to the rest of the players as far as what they should do. So I think that would be interesting. But those are... not my favorite games. My favorite games, well, we played some of my favorite game last podcast when we did the Game of Things. That was awesome.
It's a good one.
You need a lot of people to play that game, to play it well, to make it the best, which I generally don't have that many people to play with. But one of the games that holds up very well, whether you're 3, 4, 5, or 6 player, is the game Catan, formerly known as Settlers of Catan. And because they've gone through rebranding and then different editions and stuff, it's very hard to order online unless you order off in the same place and get all the exact same editions, because then you end up with some Chinese edition that has some plastic pieces to it. And then the cards are a little bit different size and they have the expansions that are the appropriate size. And therefore, it kind of all melds together. And it's like, boy, we have a difference. It's all melded into one. It's a little annoying, but can be. Still.
I mean, I'd imagine it would be, you know, if that ever actually happened, right?
Yeah, I mean, the world's a tricky place, and it can get you, you know. But hey, if you can save $5, you save $5.
It's true.
So that I love Settlers of Catan, which is still what it is to me because I'm old enough to remember what was Settlers of Catan.
Is it just called Catan now?
It's like just Catan.
Sort of like how Swiss cake rolls are just Swiss rolls.
So where do you guys stand on Catan? Because Catan has the base game. And then there's expansion plus expansion plus expansion, or two of the three, or however you want to play, as being your favorite version of Catan, if you like Catan. So first question first, second question second.
Okay, so...
go ahead, Kevin.
My first point is, yes, I like the game. I think it has a few weaknesses to it. So here's the thing. It's like... it's sort of like baby's first Euro game, which is cool and all. Some people don't like the game for that reason, because to some people it's like, oh, there's just Catan and there's nothing else. It's like, guys, there's this whole world of board games in this similar fashion that you could be playing, and I'm not going to get into that because I actually don't care that much. But the thing about Catan is that it comes down very much to who you play it with. Because if you have a very cutthroat group, after the first couple games, you'll realize just how quickly it devolves into, well, I need to go through and make sure I've covered every possible trade opportunity with every single player twice to make sure that I'm not leaving anything. And I could just, then you end your turn and then play moves on. And that's 4 hours later and the leader's still 2 victory points away from winning and nobody will trade with them because they have that one card face down. That might be their winning victory point. And he insists that it's just more road building. And it's like, guys, can we just play the game, please? Can we just roll dice and collect resources? And so if you're just too cutthroat, the game becomes a real slog. Otherwise, it's pretty good.
Okay, which version of the game? You talking basic? You talking with Seafarers? You talking with Cities and Knights? You talking with Traders and Barbarians? You talking some of those together?
I've not played Traders and Barbarians. To me, like the best like epic version of Catan is Seafarers, Cities and Knights with custom board holding wood thing.
Mm-hmm.
But barring that, I think just Seafarers is actually perfectly great game in its own right.
I think for me, I kind of got Catan'd out. So we played it a lot over a few years with all of our friends. And so I just kind of... the other thing to add to Kevin's point of kind of how the game goes and how there's like this, everyone's got to trade. There's points where the game would get so complex in Cities and Knights that people would take 5 minutes to take their turn because they're thinking of all the different possibilities that they could do and what their strategy is. And like the games took way too long. And then also there's always comes up kind of a point in the game where you know who's going to win. It's just a matter of getting there. Like maybe there's a couple people that have a chance at winning, but there's usually 2 or 3 people that you know are not going to win. And they're basically just stuck there for the next hour and a half, just playing out the game, just waiting to lose, which if you're one of those people can get kind of boring. So that's one of the reasons that I'm not a huge fan of it. I would say if you're just playing like the base game with good friends and you're eating pretzels and drinking root beer and just having a good time, like that could be really, really enjoyable.
Yeah, I do enjoy Catan. I do feel like it can be a slog at times. As far as the version, I like base game 5 and 6 player expansion, but with less than 6 players. So it's just the base game with a bigger board and more goodies. Because the thing I love about Catan is getting resources and building stuff. Like, it just feels good to roll a number and be like, oh, sweet, I get, like, 6 different resources. Like, that's just a good dopamine rush of collecting all these sweet, sweet goodies and hoping a 7 doesn't get rolled.
Mm-hmm.
And the just having a big board with only, like, 3 players on it allows you to do that.
Mm-hmm. Do you play to a higher point total? Because you're expecting to build more settlements and upgrade to cities and just be like, okay, we're going to play base game, basically. But we're going to play to way more than 10.
Yes, I think you play to like 12 or 15 or something.
Wow, nice. So recently, I have got my wife into Catan. And yes, I do have the wooden board that's designed to hold Cities and Knights Seafarers expansions up for 4 players. I've actually had more than 4 players on it. They just don't have a place to put all their pieces and stuff. But oh well, I'm working on that. Potentially working on that. That kind of goes back to the DIY woodworking thing. Because I saw where this guy built his own table, then with an insert that you can just use as a regular game table covered in felt, with another insert that just makes it a regular table. So it's kind of like a 3-layered table.
Smart.
6-sided. It's like, oh man, with cup holders and everything. We're like, ah, I think I have space in my basement to put that up. So one of the things I realized I like about Catan is when it is somebody's turn, you can have conversations with the people around you if you're willing to get your head out of the game for a few minutes. You can ask them about what's going on in their life or, you know, if you all go to the same church about the recent sermon or about the weather or sports or whatever you want, because there's enough space in the game that it's not like Dutch Blitz where it's like, you're not going to carry on a conversation during Dutch Blitz. You know, it's not a game where it's so highly competitive to where you are kind of against that person until the game is over. At least the way that I would play it. Some people play it probably a much higher level of intensity of like, no, shoot, 3 was rolled and you get resources on a 3. This is not good. I don't play it to that degree. I would say probably my favorite version of the game is definitely with Cities and Knights. If there is or isn't Seafarers, that's fine. I like Seafarers in the sense that I want gold on the map. So the all five resources plus the gold.
Because gold is really fun.
Adds that. It is. It can be super OP though. And then there doesn't have to be islands to that though. Like I want the gold, but I don't really need the islands. If I want to build like a cool little like peninsula into the map or something, or a river down part of it, that's fine. But I don't need to be like bouncing around islands for extra victory points and making the game longer that way, because that definitely makes the game longer. So really it's a combination of all three, but not all of all three in that regard. And playing with people that, how do I put this? I'm not even sure exactly how to put this. Playing with people that want to play to enjoy the game and are slightly competitive. I don't need like crazy competitive, because I'm not going to go crazy competitive.
But you do want them to at least try.
Yeah, I want them to at least get close to beating me. And and that's where we're at right now, and that's fun. But if you get people that are more competitive, the game takes longer because, yes, like you talk about, the turns take longer and it's more intense to where it's like, hang on. Will anybody give me a wood for a sheep or a stone for a brick? Come on, anybody. And it's like, dude, we're just sick and tired of you having a turn. Just move on. Like, oh, okay, then hang on. Let me think for a minute. If I can't make that trade, I can't. And so the more experienced people get in the game, the longer it all seems to take, and the higher likelihood I have of losing. So if you're going to play with people that are maybe a little more intense, it's better to have the 5 and 6 player, because then they can be building in between turns and their turns don't take as long. So I almost want to play 4 player and just say, you know what, we'll always have a building phase. We'll just make it a thing, because that would speed the game up substantially. But yeah, that was my, random topic after having worked all day and not really having anything to talk about. But so, I think you guys provided me with enough to think about tonight, so I appreciate that.
Yeah. By the way, speaking of table games, I have a proposal for you guys next time all of us are in the same room.